It's time for Squawk Talk, talking business to business. Squawk Talk highlights business and business owners in the Atlanta area. Squawk Talk is brought to you by Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration.
Well, good afternoon. We're broadcasting live from the Eagle's Nest in the heart of Atlanta. Welcome to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. I'm your host, Kate Skirmerhorn. We have a very special edition of Squawk Talk today. Joining me in the studio is a panel of industry experts in the field of property management. Today we will be discussing topics that face issues of property managers, property owners, and tenants. So let's take a minute to get to know our guests. Our first guest will be Joel Elliott from EW Capital. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you, Kate, for having us again.
Would you start us off telling us a little bit about who you are, your company, and maybe a specialty you might have in the field?
Sure. I'm Joel Elliott. I'm the Senior Property Manager at EW Capital Management. We are a multifamily and single-family management company located in the south side of Atlanta. We manage around 500 units.
Great. Our next panel guest is Ramon Gonzalez from My Home Spot. Welcome, Ramon.
Hey, Kate. Thanks for having me. My company name is My Home Spot. I'm one of the owners. We manage primarily single-family homes. We've got 1,000 properties under management, and we work with investors and just mom-and-pop investors or institutional investors and homeowners that are looking for other options with their property.
Very good. Welcome again now to Dan Wilhelm from Three Options Realty.
Thank you, Kate. Nice to be here. Appreciate you inviting us on. We have a company, Three Options Realty, located in Roswell, Georgia, but we're actually all over the Atlanta area. We have 22 agents that serve pretty much the entire Atlanta metro footprint. And, again, we also primarily work with single-family detached homes.
Very good. And our final, last but not least, certainly, is Robert Gilstrap from Title One Management. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Kate. Our company is Title One Management. We're located in Cartersville, Georgia, although we manage single-family properties really in 13 metro counties. And we've got about 300 properties under management.
Very good. Well, as I mentioned today, where it's a special edition of Squawk Talk, we're going to have a panel discussion talking about the issues. So the first issue we're going to throw out to our panel today, be careful, boys, it's a tough one. Why would somebody who has an investment property or a home of any kind that's looking to rent want to work with a professional rent property management company?
Anybody?
Go for it.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I guess I would ask the question, why wouldn't they? There's a lot of risk in being a landlord. In fact, as soon as you decide to become an investor, they paint a big X right on your back. And so there's a lot of liability. And the best way to mitigate that risk, that liability, is to hire a professional. To me, I've been doing this since 1997, and I continue to be amazed at the things that I don't know. And so the longer that you're in it, the more you know. And if you're a landlord and you really haven't been doing it for a while, or even you have been doing it for a while, but you haven't had, if nothing's gone wrong, that's great. It's just a matter of time. Something will, and you're going to wish you had somebody who could help you out with that.
Right. I mean, I agree with Dan completely. There are lots of things that are involved in property management that it's hard for someone to anticipate if they're not in the business. And there are a lot more regulations and laws that are applicable that can really burn somebody if they're not aware of them. So, I kind of look at it almost like an insurance policy. It's very possible that you find a tenant, things run smoothly, they never contact you about anything, there are never any legal issues. But there's a great chance that that's not going to be the case. And so, for those circumstances, you'd be lucky, but you'd maybe be better off without a property manager. But the truth is that there's usually something that comes up over the course of an extended period of time, and that's when we really kind of kick in and provide a significant level of value. But on top of the legal kind of and sort of the issues associated with having a property, it's a time soak. Our people work a lot on on managing these properties, and there's more there than I think that most people would realize. So, and we can get into that if we need to in detail, but there's a lot involved in terms of time and litigious issues, really.
Kate, I get the question all the time, and I mean, my answer kind of to an owner is, why do we hire any professionals? Mm. I mean, I can, if I really wanted to, I could repair my own transmission and do my own brakes, but knowing what my skill set is, that's not why, I don't do
right.
it. And the reason is you've got a professional who does it every day. That's all they do. They can do it cheaper, faster, better than you. And I'm pretty open with my owners, and I tell them, you know, if I can't do it cheaper or better than you, you don't need me. And but the fact is, I can't. Mm-hmm. We deal in huge volumes in a lot of ways. Maintenance is a huge one. If, you know, we're not doing a one-off paint job on a house once every couple of years, we're doing them every 2 days. Mm-hmm. And so we have, you know, vendors like crazy with established pricing. They're, you know, the like any business, I mean, there's economies of scale kick in a huge way.
Right.
Well, you may have just answered the question that came to mind as you all were talking is, what would make the property management company different from, say, just someone with a traditional real estate license who says, oh, yeah, I'll rent the house for you?
I'll actually take that question. Because we see this very often, and especially probably more so now in the last 5 years because mm-hmm. the sales market has changed substantially. Mm-hmm. So typically your professional property manager, this is a career choice for us. We have detailed training, tons of hours in terms of time that we invest in actually learning property management. Especially in Georgia, we can really point it out. To become a realtor, it takes about 75 hours of coursework to become a realtor. Of those 75 hours, you may get an hour in property management. So technically, because you're a realtor, does that qualify you to be a property manager? Not really. There's a lot more that goes into it and a lot more understanding. So in order to really to grab a hold of it and really understand it, you want to make sure that you have tons of training and hours of operation and actually facilitating it. Because if one of us decided to go away today and come back in 3 years and we haven't been active, there will be tons of things that will be completely different or industry standards that have changed. So the current property manager stays abreast. They constantly have continual education. If you look at us and probably look at this table, you probably in the last 2 years probably have more than 400 or 500 hours in continual education just sitting at the table, when typically a realtor only gets about 25 hours in their four-hour license period.
And that's because they're forced to take it.
Right, and that's because they're forced.
I mean, we actually take it voluntarily.
And the classes that we take are relevant to property management. We normally don't go and take the free class at a subdivision that, you know, hey, I get 3 hours of CE for showing up.
And don't have to learn anything. You just have to show up.
I just have to show up.
Well, I can tell you that my agents are required to take 16 hours of classroom instruction from me before I even let them loose on the street. And that's just the beginning. Our education is continuous, like Joel says. And this might be a good time to throw in a plug for NARPM.
Absolutely.
That's the National Association of Residential Property Managers, and we have a chapter here in Atlanta. It's the second largest chapter in the United States with about 200 members. And it's a place where property managers can go to learn about the trade. And we are constantly doing a particular event called Share My Scars, where the agents will sit around big tables and we'll throw out a question and say, well, this is an issue I had. You know, this is how I handle it. Is there a better way to do it? And we'll hear from other people with their experiences. It's a great way to learn. And so those agents who are, specifically, Kate, to answer your question, those agents who are not professional property managers or don't call themselves that, that just want to dabble in leasing and management, mm-hmm. they probably are not making the investment to join an organization like NARPM. They're probably not making the investment to learn the trade as a discipline, and that's the big difference.
Right, and I guess to maybe add to those points, kind of dovetails with what Dan was saying a bit, it's not maybe a priority for some other agents that are out there, and so not only are they not getting the training, but if they're doing other business, like just traditional sales business, this leasing business, this management business may not get their full attention. It may not be their priority. And I can't tell you how many times I've been approached by people that have sort of talked to me a bit about those kinds of situations and are looking for a company that can give them full attention, and it makes this management and this leasing of their property a priority. So I think that's a key difference as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you both, several of you have mentioned about education. What are some of the topics and things that you go through education on? What are some of the classes that you require of that 16 hours?
Well, the class, I have five classes, and I'm getting ready to add a sixth one to it. The first class is on the license law, Title 44, Chapter 7, and we go through it with a fine-tooth comb. So, and then we have our second class is the license law and the regulation, the commission's regulation on the license law. And then the third class is on the management agreement and the process of management. And then the fourth class is on leasing. and the lease agreement. And the fifth class is on the leasing management presentation. And there's a lot of other stuff to talk about as well.
And NARPM is key. I'm actually relatively new to NARPM, and something that should be said is all four of us sitting around here are all board members for the Atlanta chapter of NARPM. Dan, of course, is the president. Ramon's a board member. You know, I'm the president-elect for next year, and Joel's a board member as well.
And the president-elect, or the president to
the,
yes,
the double 2015. So,
yeah, we all know each other pretty well here.
But, I mean, it's the education part of it, and I feel like the baby in the woods on some of this because I did not even know NARPM existed for many years. And I've only been managing third party for other people about 8 years. I've been managing my own property for about 21 years. But whenever I came across NARPM, the of course I came in, it was more of a looking for a little bit of education. And, you know, I figured if they can teach me something to make a little bit more money. And, you know, I come out wide-eyed like it was my first day. And no joke, I really went in thinking that I knew what I was doing. And I came out from one class thinking, wow, you know, I really don't know anything about this business. And if I had have had it 20 years ago, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be on a beach somewhere.
Think about where we'd be, yeah.
Right. Yeah, NARPM has a whole bunch of different classes. There's ethics classes, maintenance classes, habitability standards classes, risk mitigation, legal issues. And we have our staff take those classes. But I think I learned the most, and I learned a lot from those things, but I really learned the most just talking to the people in the industry. It's really important to our clients and important to me as a business owner to do everything I can to make my business better. And because that impacts my employees and their morale, that impacts the satisfaction of my clients too, and of course the profitability of the business. So learning from these guys, I mean, we're really good about sharing what mistakes we've made, and collectively we're making the industry better here locally and nationally as an organization. So I think that benefits, you know, the public in general too.
Well, as property managers, obviously your interest is taking care of the owners of the property and their interests, their physical property interests. How important is it in terms of tenant screening and making sure that you're getting the right tenants and not just someone who's willing to pay the rent?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you can't we want overstate people to pay the rent. Importance of that. It's really the whole thing. It's like asking how important is it to find the right person when you get married, because you know,
you're getting married to them. That's good really for are. The next year plus.
Exactly, so. It could be a long term thing. It can be a major money soak and time soak. I like to use those phrases often. So there are lots of people out there that are looking for properties and want to lease a property, but there aren't nearly as many that are actually qualified to do so. Especially considering kind of even still the fragile nature of the economy, you know. So to answer your question, it's critically important because you can have issues, of course, with payment that can affect you financially. I mean, you've got a mortgage to pay typically as the homeowner. And what you really don't want to do is get into a situation where you have a hard time displacing this tenant and they've got they accrue a balance, they damage your property, and all of a sudden, you know, you're in the hole a substantial amount. Now, of course, our company and the company that these guys represent do a very good job of screening tenants. Of course, you can't eliminate risk, but we do really help to mitigate it substantially. And we've got great processes, and we've got a great checklist and a screening kind of system to make sure that we find good quality tenants. But
and that's one of those huge differences between the homeowner doing their own management. I mean, think about it. When you're a one-off homeowner, you're putting an ad maybe on Craigslist.
Right.
You're getting every scam artist in the world who's contacting you. We already have systems set up for all that. I mean, the homeowners I talk to don't even screen people. The screening is how much money they show
right.
up with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, when people show up with cash money.
Red flag.
Yes, huge red flag. I mean, it scares me.
What do you have, $2,000?
Right, with all of your possessions on a truck in my parking lot, you know, ready to move in. So, I mean, we all have processes for it.
And you know what? It's people, I'm sorry, but the stories that you hear, I think that kind of draw the homeowner in sometimes. You know, they give them a reason, an excuse for everything. And that's another, if I think back on clients that have come on board, you know, they're in a bad spot. They've got this tenant. They told them this and that and the other thing to kind of allow them to move in, and now they don't know what to do, you know.
So let me just throw a different angle on mm-hmm. this idea of applications, because it's true everything that you've been hearing, but there's another piece of it. the marketing for a good tenant is expensive, it's time-consuming, and the longer that a property sits vacant, the more costly that is for the owner. That's a huge cost, actually, lost opportunity costs. But what a good process of application screening will allow you, actually, to put in tenants that if you didn't have a skill set in qualifying the tenant, you might deny them an opportunity when, in fact, they might be a good candidate and a really good paying tenant and someone who will take good care of the property. But if you simply make a decision based upon the superficial look at a person, or maybe even just looking at a credit score, which is really not indicative at all of a person's whole person, but it's those kinds of things. And I've had landlords say to me, well, can we be involved in the screening process? And I said, well, why do you want to be involved in the screening process? what value do you bring to that process that we as professionals don't have sufficient? You know, and I mean, we'll go back to an owner. If an owner's putting a lot of pressure on us to put a tenant in, and we get an applicant in that is maybe questionable, we might not normally want to put them in, we might go to an owner and say, okay, we wouldn't ordinarily approve them, but you're putting a great deal of pressure on us to get someone in. Here's what we got. Here's the consequences, possibly. Here's some ways to mitigate that risk a little bit and have a conversation. But generally, it's better for owners to let the professionals handle the application process.
Do you find that's often the case when the homeowners can't let go of it being their home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they've ever lived in the house, it's
their baby.
It's their baby, and they want to. I have owners who want to show up regularly and walk through the property and look to make sure that they've taken care of the hardwood floors, and it's.
It's an emotional attachment, and the first thing I typically tell an owner who not a legitimate or bona fide investor, but a homeowner who is leasing the property because they can't sell it, for example, is they need to detach. You know, it's been their domicile, it's been their home, but now it's a business, and they've got to detach from it, and that's a lot easier said than done.
Absolutely.
A lot easier said than done, but we try to highlight that importance. And hopefully they get it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
We're listening to Squawk Talk with our expert panel of guests today in the field of property management. We have with us today Joel Elliott from EW Capital, Ramon Gonzalez from my home spot, Dan Wilhelm from
Three Option Realty,
and Robert Gilstrap from Title One Management. So the next topic would be in terms of not only tenant screening, but do you have any processes where you're owner screening, perhaps, where you maybe aren't taking on everybody who comes to you to says, I've got this property?
I'll probably answer that one first, and that's very clearly yes. We've done this for our company's been doing it for over 11 years. The substantial difference is that in our model, we cater primarily to investors and institutional investors. So our typical owner has a minimum of normally 3 to 4 houses with us. So we screen our owners because just like the situation that Dan gave an example of, or Robert, where the guy wants to come out and walk through the house, that's not an option in the style of management that we offer. This we look at it more as an asset management type situation, more so property management. This is an asset. Do you go and visit your stock that's sitting in the stock market? No. So the attachment of actually seeing, feeling, touching, all of the emotion has to completely come out of it. This house becomes to you a number. Does it generate the cash flow? What are the decisions? Decisions that need to be made are all based on future results and what the expectation is. So it's almost like we have essentially a presentation, but we also are interviewing at the same time, asking qualifying questions. What are your plans as for the property? Do you plan to be a landlord where you're a landlord by accident? That's how you have to select your firm, as well as we select our clients. We don't match very well to onesie twosies just because of the way that we present information to our owners in terms of how they view their assets versus there are some firms that I make referrals to because I say, hey, these guys are a lot better at what you're looking for in terms of what we're looking for because we work from a very high level and everything is analytical. So if the HVAC goes out, it's an analytical approach. The unit's 20 years old. With the accumulated depreciation, it makes sense for you to replace the unit and take the tax deduction versus to continue to put the Band-Aid.
We focus on a couple things when we screen our clients. Primarily, we are making sure that the property's in an area that where we feel comfortable in. And it's got to be a place where our leasing agents will feel safe. and where our tenants, of course, will feel safe. And so we evaluate those on an individual property basis pretty much. But on top of that, we've got to make sure the property is rent ready. And sometimes there are owners that really want us to throw a property in the market, and it's just not there. And that's a bad sign. And so if you're going to have those issues up front, of course, you're going to experience them over time. And then, of course, our tenants will experience those issues, and that can hurt our reputation. It can hurt the tenants' happiness and enjoyment of the property. So we do a good job of making sure that those places are ready to go once they're put on the market. And I guess the last thing that we try to do, and this is a bit tricky, is we try to make sure that the owners are actually current on their mortgage. That was a bigger issue in the past. It sort of isn't quite as big of an issue as it was before, but we have them sign these affidavits stating that they're current on their mortgage and that they're going to give us any information that we might need in order to prove that they're current to help the tenant with any issues outstanding.
Sure.
Yeah, screening these owners is one of the big things for us. I mean, it's remember, we're under maybe not equal liability, but probably equal liability than an owner would be. I know in our model, our name is actually on the lease as landlord, so really the tenant doesn't even know that the owner exists. And so if we take on a property that is in disrepair or has some sort of inherent safety issue or like Joel said, I mean, if you're taking on people who don't have the funds to keep their property up, and we're just asking for trouble. So,
well, I'll just add on to that that we're living our lives in our jobs, and if we hire an owner, or have an owner hire us, however you want to look at it, that is someone who's going to make our lives miserable. That's our life. Right. I mean, it really is our life, and so we'd hate to do it, but from time to time we have to tell an owner, "I'm sorry, I don't think this is working out. You need to go work with Ramon."
Ramon sending them to Joel.
I was just going to say that that's probably an advantage to being another advantage of being part of NARPM is that if somebody doesn't fit your business model, but maybe you've got somebody who you know that does handle those ones and twos and those difficult cases, then you can say, difficult cases sounds bad, but
we send those to non-NARPM members.
But that was something I wanted to say earlier too when we were talking about NARPM, because it's a really distinct point to make, and that is that we are like a fellowship. All of the property managers, and since 1997, I've been on the board of directors almost that whole time in one role or capacity or another, and I've gotten to know all of the key players in residential property management in Atlanta. And if I've got a question about something, I have no problem whatsoever picking up the phone and calling and say, "Hey, Joel, what would you do with this? If you had this situation, what would you do?" And he would have absolutely no problem telling me straight up. And it's just it's different than you would find in the regular real estate industry. Agents and brokers tend to be a little bit protective of their proprietary interests.
A little. Cutthroat.
But it's just not like that in property management. I've never experienced that. And it's a great benefit, I think, to all of our property managers that we have this fellowship. And we have some great vendors, too. We have affiliates, and Kate is one of the affiliates of our chapter. And we appreciate her and the people that sign up and make a commitment to our organization like Kate's doing. That gives us a credible resource to go to for things that landlords need to have done to their property. And these are trustworthy businesses that won't take unfair advantage of an owner. They'll do good work for a good price, and believe me, a tenant gets very upset if they've got to have different vendors coming out or vendors are not making their appointments as they're scheduled. What happens with those kind of tenants is they don't renew their lease. And the biggest expense to a landlord in this business is turnover. So we want vendors like Kate and others who will support us in that. And so that's another great advantage of NARPM is all the wonderful affiliates that we have associated with us.
I appreciate that, Dan. If I remember correctly, we had to have some references and some recommendations to even be a part of it. So not just anybody could join that. I want to touch next on something that Joel had brought up about maintenance in the homes. And this would be maybe an educational point to put out there. What happens when there's something that needs to be fixed in the home? And at what point do you fix it and then deal with the owner? And what point do you say, "Well, we got to get with the owner"? And what do you do when the owner says, "Sorry, I'm not ready to fix that yet"?
I think everyone's model is a little bit different. There's no set in stone concrete way that you have to do it, but I'll explain to you kind of our process a bit. When a request comes in, we notify the owner that we've received the request. We give them the details of the request, and then we notify the tenant that we have received their request. And we work on gathering information, to like the actual details, because sometimes the tenant will say, hey, I've got a leak in my kitchen, and we don't know what that means. So we'll get that together. We'll try to get estimates for the cost, and we'll make sure that the owner is aware, and then we'll ask them for their approval. If it's a non-emergency issue, we tend to wait for feedback from the client because we want them to feel confident that every request they're getting the opportunity to review, provide their feedback, and then we'll go ahead and execute. So, but if you do have an issue that's an emergency, then we have to accelerate that process very, very quickly. And so what we'll do is we'll give the owner notification, hey, it's 90 degrees out, and we've received notification that the property, the AC is not working. And so I need you to respond back within the next 3 to 4 hours, giving me approval. Here's the estimate for the cost, or here's a repair cap, because what we do sometimes is if we don't know the exact nature of the request, we'll establish a cost limit and then have the vendor let us know if it's going to exceed that so we can expedite the process of getting it done. And if we don't hear from the client, we'll still go ahead and get that work done. And our contract allows us to do that. So the owners are explained, in the beginning of the process, we explain to the owners how this all works. And if you're thinking about it as an owner, you recognize that there are going to be times when you're going to be unavailable. And the last thing you want to do is set up a situation where your property is suffering additional loss, or your tenant has an extreme amount of discomfort, or let's say that their fridge is out and the AC is out, and, all kinds of stuff is going wrong. You don't want that to persist. So.
Or you face a huge amount of liability.
Right, exactly. That's what you
want. Habitability issues you have to
address. Yeah, exactly. So
many of our owners aren't even in the country, so trying to get them within a couple of hours is a non-starter. It doesn't even work.
Right.
So we're, we have a flat amount, which I think everybody kind of does that. I mean, everybody has kind of a maintenance reserve account. Mm-hmm. And owners keep what we like to call a minimum balance, I guess. And we kind of handle anything and everything under $500 without asking the owner. And that's our model. But
there is the concept, a legal concept called warranty of habitability. And so if an owner were to say to me, we're not going to fix that leaky roof, we don't have the money, that's not an option. And that's, it's unfortunate, and I understand. I'm an investor myself, and by the way, I don't manage my own properties. I have my agents manage my properties because it's that kind of a thing. Even though I've been investing for a long time and have been managing for a long time, I get emotionally attached to my properties, and it's better to have an agent handle that on my behalf.
Kind of like the lawyer shouldn't represent himself.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where I was going with that.
So the question then I would have is, what is one of the biggest mistakes that a tenant makes in terms of being in the property that could be simply avoided to maybe prevent issues from happening, whether it's maintenance related or even potentially not, besides not just paying the rent, but getting evicted? Maybe there's other issues that you see a tenant makes out
Ways
there.
To avoid getting evicted? Don't stop paying rent.
Yes, that's good advice right there, right? Well, I mean, there are complications that come up during the course of a tenancy, and a lot of times I've found that it's really when tenants do stuff and don't let us know. That can cause for complicated move-outs. I mean, obviously, Robert, if a tenant stops paying rent, there's going to be an issue, that's there, right? But if we're thinking about something a bit more nuanced, it's really those kinds of scenarios where a tenant put up a wall to split up a large room where they've, replaced the floor, they took out the carpet, put in tile. And then when move-out is handled, those are the kinds of situations when sometimes it'll actually end up going to court because the client's really, really upset about it and they want to pursue and get some kind of recourse or have some kind of recourse. Mm-hmm. So I would just make sure that you're staying in communication with your property management team if you want to make any alterations to your property. It can end up being a mess later on.
Yeah, I agree with Ramon. The biggest part is failure to report and understanding the lease agreement. During our last session when I was here, we talked in a great deal kind of about that you really have to understand the lease agreement. That is a legal contract. And one of the things that a lot of tenants don't understand is that as a realtor, we have to declare a agency agreement and who we represent. All of our leases or some documentation that the tenant has saw and not paid attention to says that we clearly represent the landlord.
Right.
I can explain the lease to you, but it's not my job to interpret it for you or to go into grave detail because that would compromise my agency agreement. I represent the owner in this transaction. You have the right to representation if you so choose. So it's really making sure that they understand that agreement and what they're agreeing to at the time when they sign it. Outside of that, if they follow that to the T, there should never be an issue in the tenancy. Most cases and most disputes arise probably 90% out of the time because of something they didn't read or understand in the lease agreement, or they chose to interpret it in their own way.
Choose not to understand.
Right. 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 Well, and I think that's that. You maybe hit the head on the nail on the head that a lot of times it's written in very legalese. It's a legal document, and people don't necessarily understand or don't read it. How many times have people put papers in front of people and said, sign here, without reading it? I drive people like you crazy because I sit down and read every word that's there to make sure that I understand on anything I'm legally signing, I understand it. And I think a lot of people don't. They say, sign here, sign here, sign here, and they never fail to – their failure – take the time to read it.
And a professional, though, doesn't want you to just sign and go away. We want you to understand it because, I mean, it's going to cause us problems down the road.
Right.
So and none of us are trying to bury or hide anything in our agreement. It's just – it's black and white. I mean, we try to spell out the terms in excruciating detail sometimes.
Yes, we help. My leasing agents are required. We have 30 articles on our lease. They're not long and in depth. So, but the 30 articles. We read each line item, and we pause. You have an opportunity to ask questions at that time. Even before you come in to sign the lease, we can forward you a copy of the lease for you to review prior to then. Also, before we accept your payment, we leave the room for 15 minutes for you to read again and go through the lease and if you have any questions. Because once you sign, it's kind of like a car. Mm-hmm. Once you go and sign and you buy the car and you drive off the lot, it's your car. You can't take it back. There's no buyer's remorse. So the agreement goes into effect and becomes binding. So we explain that to them. And most, they may flip through. We've come in sometimes and the lease has been sitting on the table and we leave for a second, come back. They've already initialed and signed every page. And I'm like, okay, we're still going to go through this because we want to make sure that you understand.
Certainly.
So it's, you know, it's an obligation to make sure that the person understands it. We fulfill as a customer, which is what I consider my tenants to be. I've given you the service that was required of me. My client is actually the landlord. It was my job to act on his behalf. So I have to explain everything in great detail for him and make sure he fully understands because I have a fiduciary duty to him.
Absolutely. And that leads to the next question is, how important is it for your clients, the owners, the landlords, to understand the Georgia tenancy law? and to what extent do you have to educate your owners on that, or do they just trust that as professionals, you're taking care of it?
Well, there's no reason why the landlord would have to be intimately familiar with the landlord-tenant law if he has a real estate professional working for them, or particularly a property management professional. So, and most of them are not. Most of them are totally unaware of the fact that a landlord-tenant law even exists.
Right. Yeah. For us, really, it's, you know, we've created policy. Our operational infrastructure is based off of landlord-tenant law. And whenever we're having to explain to our clients why we're doing what we're doing, that's when they start to kind of interface with landlord-tenant law indirectly. But I don't think that, you know, the question is how familiar do they have to be. I'd like Dan said, I don't think they have to be very familiar at all. We're there for them to kind of help them through and navigate those issues.
All right. So we talked about what's the biggest mistake that tenants make. What's one of the biggest mistakes that your owners make in terms of having a property that you're taking control of?
Not taking our advice. I mean, how many people hire an attorney and then do the exact opposite or go to the doctor, get a recommendation, and then you keep doing what you're doing? And, I mean, there's a reason why you hire a professional. If you have no trust in their skills, then don't hire them.
I like to tell the owner that we're a team, that this is a team process, that the property manager isn't alone out there doing this, that if the owner isn't willing to participate and be a productive part of that team, then the relationship's probably not going to work very well.
I think there's two things that I think sometimes owners fail to do that are that's pretty important. One is they need to change the mindset. Dan talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. You really have to say, okay, this is now an investment property, like Dan said, a business. And it's going to have its ups and downs. And there's going to be times where you're generating some cash and times when cash is coming out of pocket. you got to kind of embrace that, understand that. And during those times that can be a little more difficult, to just, do your best, stay fully involved and committed to the property. Otherwise, things can kind of fall apart a bit. Second thing is to resist the urge to communicate and stay in touch with the tenant. We don't allow for that communication. Clients often request that, and that's a big mistake because there are lots of tenants that will do things to try to, get their way, and that's okay, but they'll try to maybe, say certain things, maybe manipulate situations a bit. And it can, if you open that door, there's no closing it. And a lot of what we do is we're there to kind of shelter them and to sort of manage that relationship. So that's definitely something that the landlord should not do.
Mm-hmm. And so then the next question we would ask is, when a homeowner is saying they're just getting ready to make that transition, what kind of things that say maybe they're a reluctant landlord? What kind of things can you do to help them make that transition from just being a business? I mean, how do you help that reluctant landlord make their home now a business?
Well, for us, that's where we kind of, because we do take some smaller landlords, and that's when we kind of go to Investor 101. And the first part that you really have to understand before you can make an investment, it's kind of like when you buy a mutual fund. You have to read the prospectus and know what the expected rate of return is and be realistic about the investment. So now let's turn this into an investment. We're going to look at what the current rental rates are in the market in which you're there. We're going to look at what all of the expenses are that are going to be outlined for this, what you should kind of be doing to prepare for based on our walkthrough. If it looks like, oh, okay, you've lived here for 15 years and you've had this carpet for 10 of the 15 years. We may make it, through one tenant. So there needs to be some planning here for a future carpet replacement. Same thing with paint or other articles in the house. Because, of course, when you have a property or kind of like a rental car, all of us have rented vehicles before. We may treat the rental car a little bit more harshly than we do our own personal car. Same thing when it comes to a rental property. So you got to think about that. You've stretched carpet 10 years, but tenant's not going to be as forgiving because at the end of the day, it's not their carpet. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like they're going to do the bare minimum in order to maintain it while they're there. So it's transitioning, thinking about all of those different things and expenses that may be coming up and what your future plan is for the house. Is it at some point I want to be able to sell this investment? So we kind of sit down and we say, let's put everything on paper and what the projected return is. And we set a very clear expectation that this may be a negative amortization or a negative cash flow situation just because of where your mortgage are or you're in value. Unfortunately, we can't change rental rates. And if I sell your dream and you say, well, I need to get $1,250 because my mortgage is $1,150 to be able to pay your fee, then we are already going to start off on the wrong foot, because I could tell you instantly from day one, some cases we rent relatively quickly, but if you have 2 months where the property didn't rent, it's instantly negative cash flow for the entire year, and you'll already be upset. So we want to set a clear expectation of what this will look like in the first year, if you're going to make money, if you're going to lose money, so that way you're understanding, okay, well, this is very realistic. So that way you can really decide if I am cut out to be a landlord.
There's also a really big income tax question, and Joel kind of danced around it a little bit. But specifically, we're not CPAs, we're not tax attorneys, we're just real estate people. But there's some things that we know, and so when it comes time to talk about those kinds of things, we can give them some ideas about how this can be a really big tax benefit for them. Most of us are investors ourselves, and we understand how that works, how it shows up on the bottom line on our tax return. But at a minimum, we can try to hook them up with a CPA, if they don't have one already, who can give them some actual advice, and they can see what the impact is going to be. Because it's not always about the cash flow. Cash flow is important, for sure, but there's a lot of things you can do with that. There's a lot of benefits. And I think Joel also referred to this, too, and that's, what's the long-term plan? What's the end game going to look like for that particular landlord? I've had landlords say to me, I've got three houses, I've got three daughters. Each house is my daughter's college education. And, well, when an owner says that to me and I look and see his daughters are 2, 5, and 6, or, something like that, I say, okay, this is going to be a long-term holding. Mm-hmm. We understand what that's going to be. And now we can talk about the end game and how are you going to How are you going to liquidate these assets in a sensible way that works with the benefit of taxes and all of that? So there's a lot of things you can do with an owner to help them understand that.
And I guess because the question really is about sort of helping someone with that transition, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we do, and we try to do some of the things that that Dan and Joel just discussed, but another important element I feel is to get the client to really know our team and kind of get them to feel confident that they're ready to hand off these responsibilities to a couple members of our team that are going to be taking care of it. So we have meetings with them, and we kind of get on calls, and we make the proper introductions. So I think that's kind of and during that orientation process, that's where a lot of that, okay, you know, I'm doing this, these guys seem to know what they're doing, let's go ahead and let's make it happen. And that tends to happen during that moment, and mm-hmm. I think it's beneficial.
Okay. Well, now, Ramon, you had mentioned earlier that you try to screen your clients to make sure that they're paying current on the mortgage, but life happens. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it for a minute. What kind of protections do the tenant have if the owner goes bankrupt, the owner fails to pay the mortgage? What kind of protections does the tenant have still living in a house that's now about to be foreclosed on?
Well, there was an act that I think had recently expired that provided a good level of – do you guys know if that was actually reenacted?
Yes.
Okay, was it? Well, that's
supposed
pretty
to
good.
Sunset this year, but it's already been reached.
Okay, yeah. That's good to hear. Then, I mean, that offers a good deal of protections. To kind of give a little bit of detail, basically there was a time, I think, before the act was enacted that tenants could be forced to actually move out if the person lost the property to foreclosure. But now, if they have a legitimate lease, they're actually able to stay in the property. And so that I think when I tell, if that, because this happened a few times with us, not as much recently, making people aware of that, I think kind of gives them a greater level of comfort. So when we find that there's a delinquency, we communicate with the homeowner. We try to find out what is going on. And then we kind of walk them through or review what their actual legal rights are.
Because you may have a tenant who's paying their rent at their house, but the landlord may have 100 homes. And as a business as a whole, their investment is maybe failed.
Yeah. What Ramon's talking about is the Protecting Tenants and Foreclosure mm-hmm. Act. And it's the problem that we have, and maybe you guys have had a different experience, is typically we're the last people to find out that the property is going into foreclosure. Usually we find out because the tenant calls us. They're irate, very upset, because there are people out there, appraisers on the property, realtors on the property, bankers on the property, people that are coming out there, inspectors, and they're finding out from them, or they get a letter in the mail that tells them that the property is going into foreclosure, and they get upset. And so they call us. We're the advocate for the landlord, and in fact, until it actually forecloses, because foreclosure is an event and it's also a process. The event is the set out, but the process is from the date that the rent stops being paid until we actually evict them and move them out. So we have to kind of figure out where are they in this process, but the tenants don't want to listen to us, even though we have really their best intentions in mind, because we're the landlord's representative. So it's a hard conversation to have, but the reality is, under the law, the tenant is protected, and in most cases, and there's some different possibilities that can happen. Right. But in most cases, if it's an investor buying the property, buying the foreclosure, taking the foreclosure, then they have to honor that lease. So if there's 6 months left on the lease, they have to let the tenant remain there for 6 months. And a lot, if it's a bank that's taking it, a lot of times the banks don't want the rent. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know where to put it in their books. So the tenant may be able to stay there for 6 months without even paying any rent. Mm-hmm. But try to convince a tenant. Honestly, and I perfectly get and understand where they're coming from. They don't want to hear that from me. They're not comfortable with that. So the best thing I can do is tell them, go Google the Protecting Tenants and Foreclosure Act, and if that's not enough for you, go talk to an attorney mm-hmm. and get an attorney to explain to you what your rights are.
Right, and we'll send them a link to that. And like you said, if it's an investor purchase, then they'll be able to satisfy the remainder of the lease. And I think
I forgot minimum, the stats. At a minimum, they have 90 days.
Right. If it's going to be a homeowner that purchases, right. Exactly.
Those even if it were point. A homeowner that purchases.
So we kind of – we walk them through that. We tell them – and in addition to that, we just sort of help them. We say, hey, you know, we have a huge inventory of houses that we can move you into. And so as long as you kind of make that tenant feel like you're there for them and you give them this data, that their primary concern is, am I going to be kicked out tomorrow? You know, they're really kind of really worried about that. So you assuage their concerns and show them a way forward, and we've been able to kind of – I guess take care of the issues. With
we totally
success.
Spin that into a positive where we're at. We've had it happen multiple more times than I wanted. But by and large, what happens is the mortgage company ends up taking the property back at the courthouse steps. Then the very next step is they're going to offer cash for keys to the occupant. And so I try my best to – there's no guarantee that'll happen, of course. But, you know, I'm trying to tell the tenants, guess what? At the worst case scenario is you're going to get paid a decent amount of money to move, and guess what? We're going to move you into another house, right. And you're going to be happy, and everything's going to be fine. Right. And usually that calms people down. So
yeah they do. They get upset.
Yeah, because really we've dealt with that quite a bit. And I guess because we're a little bit of a different type of firm, we represent some asset management firms that actually buy notes, and we go through negotiation processes. With some cases, it's homeowners. Some cases, it's tenants. Just depending on what it is in that particular fund that the instructions are that have to be done. So we are pretty abreast in terms of what their rules are, in terms of with it being and it's just a lot of things that go into with if it's an arm's length transaction. Typically, everything that we do, if there's a professional property manager involved, is always going to be an arm's length transaction. So the tenant gets afforded all of those rights up under the lease. But even in Georgia, our basic lease termination is that the landlord has to give a tenant a minimum of 60 days to be able, if they want to terminate the lease. That's the only way we can legally terminate our lease. We have to give 60 days. Tenant can give us 30. So that's one thing that, you know, works in their favor. And the Foreclosure Act extends it an extra 30 days where they'll get the 90-day protection. So it's just really getting them to understand and hoping that we have a solid enough relationship with our owner for them to be able to kind of disclose that information, because we can make the transition a lot better if we can prepare the tenant in the front end before the threatening letters start to arrive at the house, or all of the, I call them the foreclosure junkies that want to try and stop the foreclosure, start doing all of their mailings directly to the property address, and they're like, what is going on?
Right.
So.
Right. Well, as we're getting ready to close out, since all of you are on the board of NARPM, I'm going to give you a chance to plug the conference that you have coming up in September. So if someone wants to take it away and talk about a little about the conference coming up, the dates, and what all will be involved.
The date is...
I'll give you a softball that one. It's September 12th and 13th.
Thank you very much. That's why I didn't answer the question.
That's why I was pointing at him.
So we're all on the board of directors. We should all know that. And we're having our board meeting tomorrow morning, so we'll talk about that some more. But, yeah, it's a state conference. It's a day and a half long. We'll have some professional designation training from NARPM on the first day, and then and we'll have a social, I think, that night. And then the next day we'll have a lot of training, a lot of 1.5-hour blocks of instruction. I'm one of the instructors for that particular group of instructions, and we have some really good instructors from all over Georgia that it's an opportunity for all of our members and people who aren't members actually to come in and learn about property management. You know, I want to talk any more about that. Joel is our event coordinator. He probably knows more of the details than
sure.
I do.
It's a fantastic conference that we're planning at the state level. For $150, if you're not a member of NARPM, you can come to this conference. You have an opportunity to attend, I believe it's probably about 6 different classes on 6 different topics in one day. So this is even a great opportunity if you're a realtor and you're thinking about becoming a property manager. It's a great opportunity to kind of get your feet wet a little bit at 6 different areas of what we do on a day-to-day basis to maybe help you make that final decision, as well as it allows you to meet a series of our vendors, because we have a vendor fair as well. And we have a series of sponsors that are actually sponsoring the event as well, too, that are there to kind of talk to you and to get you started anywhere from if you're trying to figure out about your software that you want to use based on what your model is going to be. If you're trying to figure out how to set up from a legal form standpoint, it's just a great opportunity to get a mass amount of information in 2 days for $150. I don't think you can get any other type of value. An attorney just for a consultation will charge you more than that for a few hours just to find out about your structure of your company. But I think it's a great segue for people to be able to really learn about what we do and to give an opportunity, even if they wanted to, before they decided to join our chapter.
Very good. And we'll repeat that's September 12th and 13th. It's going to be at the Marietta Hilton Conference Center.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. Special thank you again to our expert panel for being on the show. As we close out, tell us again about your company and where we can find some more information about your services. We'll start this time with Robert Gilstrap from Title One Management.
Well, you said Title One Management. You can reach us, obviously, online at our excruciatingly long URL, which is titleonemanagement.com.
With the one is a number one.
Actually, it works either way, okay. So I at least had the foresight to do that. unfortunately, management is all spelled out. And certainly feel free to contact us either through the website, or you can reach us by telephone at 678-792-2100.
All right, and Dan Wilhelm from Three Options Realty.
Right, Three Options Realty. That's with the number three, but our website is threeoptionsrealty.com, and you can go either way, spell it or put the number in. You can reach us at 678-397-1282. If you know somebody who's looking for property management, let us know. But we also do sales. The three options in our company are sales, leasing, and property management.
Very good. And Ramon Gonzalez from MyHomeSpot.
Yeah, you can reach us at atlanta.myhomespot.com. Again, atlanta.myhomespot.com. You can give us a call at 678-999-4422. And you can also email me directly if you like, Ramon, that's R-A-M-O-N, at myhomespot.com.
Very good. And Joel Elliott from EW Capital Management.
Like Kate said, we're EW Capital Management. You can reach us on the web at www.ewcapitalmgmt.com to make sure you can Google us or go directly into it. Or if you decide you want to give us a call at 404-343-2794 and reach out to us. We do specialize pretty much in the south side of town. If you know anybody that's looking for property management services, leasing, either multifamily or single family residential, we'd be more than glad to help.
Great. Thank you again to all my guests. I'm Kate Skirmerhorn with Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration, taking care of all your floor cleaning and restoration needs. You to listen to this show and other Squawk Talk broadcasts, go to squawktalk.businessradiox.com. Until the next Squawk Talk, remember, when you're ready to get the job done right, set the eagle in flight.